still a little woozy, and I'm not giving anyone a reason to say I should stay in the hospital a minute longer. When we get to the door, Grant's truck is idling, and there's not a skulking paparazzi in sight. "They didn't follow me, but who knows how long that will last," he says as he hops out of the truck to open the door for me. "Can't a guy get kicked in the head without the world knowing about it?" I ask, trying to inject some lightness into the moment.
"Not when it's you, superstar,"
Ripley says, taking my lead. Grant guffaws at her nickname for me, and they all watch as I concentrate on putting one foot in front of the other and not shaking as I climb up into the back seat of the truck. Ripley rushes around and gets in the other door, then slides over to the middle.
"You should have stayed overnight. Your face is white as a sheet, and if you tell me you feel okay, I know you're lying."
The fact that she can read me so easily is actually comforting. "I'm gonna be just fine, sugar." Her hands clench into fists on her lap, and I reach over and cover one.
"But,
Ripley, look at me." I wait for her eyes to lift. "It'll take a hell of a lot more than a ton of bowl to keep me from being with you." Her eyes shimmer in the glow of the fading dome light. "But if you ever put yourself in danger like that again, I swear to God, I'll make sure you can't sit for a week for being so stupid." Her mouth drops open.
"Stupid? Are you serious?"
"Fuck yes, I'm serious. Next time you let the professionals handle it, and you stay on the sidelines where you're safe. If anything happened to you..." I trail off as Dad opens the front door of the truck for Ma. She twists in the seat and looks back at us.
"I think we've had enough excitement for one night. I'm ready to go home."
"Sounds like a plan, Ma."
30. I don't sleep. The clock ticks over past midnight, 1, 2, 3, and I sit up, watching Boone's chest to make sure he's still breathing. I tried to get him to sleep in the main house with his folks, but he refused. Stubborn ass. Buford followed us up to the apartment and curled up on the floor next to the bed, keeping us both company and offering Boone comfort. Every couple of hours, I wake him up just like the nurse instructed. Each time, my stomach twists until he opens his eyes and smiles at me. The last time, he finally tells me, "I'm not leaving this earth yet, sugar. You haven't told me you love me yet." "Then I'll never tell you, because I refuse to let you ever leave." Boone falls back asleep with a groggy smile, and I assume he won't remember a thing about it in the morning. When 7 o'clock rolls around, I'm fading, the effects of the hospital coffee long gone. Boone sits up in bed just as I'm drifting off. I bolt upright, my head swiveling around. "What's wrong? Are you okay? Do you need me to..." One thickly muscled arm wraps around me and pulls me against his hard chest. "I'm fine. It's okay. Calm down, sugar." He presses a kiss to my hair and holds me close. With my ear to his chest, I listen to the strong, even beat of his heart and take comfort in every thump. "I'm so fucking glad you're okay." His arm loosens when I speak, and I look up at him. "Don't scare me like that again. I'm not sure I can handle it." His blue eyes stare down at me with an expression I can't quite identify. "I think you've already handled more than most people will in a lifetime." His voice goes quiet. "But that doesn't mean I'm going to let you get away with not saying you love me." My eyebrows shoot up. "You remember?" Boone nods slowly. "Of course I remember. I don't forget anything about you, and especially not something like that." My heart hammers now, so hard that I'm afraid tachycardia might be imminent. "I was trying to get you to sleep. It was just..."
"Shh. You can hold it in for as long as you need. I'll be waiting, sugar."
His gaze is soft, and I can read it in all the things he's not saying. He's falling in love with me. I swallow back the lump in my throat, trying to control my rioting emotions. Boone's stomach sends up a loud, perfectly timed growl, and Buford hops to his feet and lays his chin on the bed. Boone and I both reach out to pet him, and our hands collide.
"I bet you'd tell me if I got you a puppy."
"Don't you dare. I already have a foul-mouthed parrot living at your house."
"We'll see."
I roll out of bed, ready to change the subject. "We need to get you fed."
"Shower first,"
he says, stretching his arms above his head with a yawn. You have to be careful with the staples.
Then I guess you're going to have to help me,
Boone says with a wink, looking way too incredibly attractive for someone who got kicked in the head by a bull not even 12 hours ago. All right, superstar. Sponge bath it is. I didn't actually give Boone a sponge bath, but I did help him make sure he followed the care instructions for his head wound. When we make our way to the house, the scent of bacon and sugary sweetness hits my nose.
Ma must have gone all out, because that smells like her homemade sticky buns and bacon.
The deep timbre of Boone's voice carries through the house, and Mrs. Thrasher sticks her head out of the kitchen. The smile that sweeps over her features is enough to light up the whole house. Thank the Lord. She comes toward us, and Boone wraps her in a hug.
Sorry to scare you, Ma.
You've been scaring the life out of me since you were 5 years old and climbed onto the roof of the barn because Grant said you could fly. Oh my God, he didn't— I'm picturing a Kyle-sized Boone on the roof, and it's enough to give me a heart attack. He only broke one leg. The two mattresses they'd stolen off their beds cushioned most of the fall. Oh my God.
That's what happens when you have boys,
Boone says, like it's no big deal that he could have died at five. Boone's mom looks to me. You better hope you have girls. Boone will keep them wrapped up in cotton batting and never let them out of his sight. Boone's arm comes around me, and I wonder if he can feel the tense set of my shoulders.
Now you're scaring Ripley, Ma. I haven't even gotten her to admit she's my girlfriend, so if you skip right to babies, you might send her running for the hills.
Mrs. Thrasher shoots me a wink. I think she's made of stronger stuff than that. Come on, I've been keeping the sticky buns warm in the oven for you, and I suppose if you give me a hug, I'll share my bacon, too. 4 hours later, Boone has finally proven to his family that he's okay.
Ripley and I have to head back to Nashville so she can work tomorrow, and I've got a couple interviews I shouldn't miss.
Interviews? Are they going to make you famous? Kyle asks. Boone laughs, and Wendy ruffles Kyle's hair. Your Uncle Boone is already famous, kiddo. No, he's not. He plays catch with me in the yard. Famous people don't do that. Good point, little man. A smile tugs at my lips. Boone is definitely not your average celebrity. Seeing him here with his parents and nephew, I have a whole new outlook on who he really is. Which is exactly what he probably planned, diabolical man. Are you coming back for Thanksgiving and Christmas, Uncle Boone?
You know I wouldn't miss them for the world, but I might have to work, so they could be short trips.
If you don't come, I'm going to eat all of Lala's mashed potatoes. Boone swings Kyle up into his arms.
Well, I can't let that happen. Looks like I'll be here for sure, just to make sure I get some.
He squeezes the little boy to his chest before setting him down and crouching in front of Wendy's belly.
Listen up, little guys or girls, or little guy and little girl. You stay cooking as long as you need. We'll be ready to meet you when you decide you're ready.
Now you're talking to them like you talked to Kai?
Of course. They gotta know their Uncle Boone's voice when they come out. That way when I hold them at the hospital, they'll fall asleep like little angels in my arms.
Wendy rolls her eyes, but it takes everything I have to keep my ovaries intact. Since when did I think it was drop-dead sexy for a man to like babies? Oh, right, since forever. Me and every woman in the history of ever. Kyle throws his arms around my waist while I'm still recovering from my mental picture of Boone holding a newborn. I hug him back and ruffle his hair. When Kyle releases me, he turns back to Boone. Make sure to bring Ms. Ripley, too. I like her. She's pretty. And she smells nice, too. Boone comes toward me, wrapping an arm around my shoulders and bringing me against his side in what has become a regular move of his.
Damn right I'll bring her back. You've got good taste, kid.
Kyle throws himself at me one more time, and I give him another hard squeeze. It was good to meet you, buddy. He bounces from me to Boone once more, and I can't keep the smile off my face. The grip I've been keeping on my heart slips another notch at the thought of so easily sliding into their family.
You make sure you let Ripley drive. I don't care how much you love that truck. It's doctor's orders.
Boone's dad steps into the living room after refusing my help to load our suitcases in the truck.
Dad, I'm fine.
Mr. Thrasher crosses to me and picks up my hand before dropping the keys in it and closing my fingers around them.
Ripley's driving.
A chuckle works its way out of my throat. Don't worry, I won't scratch her. Be safe, both of you. This comes from Boone's mom. Yes, ma'am. I'll make sure he calls you when we get back to Nashville. Thank you for taking such good care of my boy, Ripley. She comes toward me and wraps me in a hug.
You're always welcome here. Always.
The burn of emotion works its way up the back of my throat and tingles behind my eyes. Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate that. Mrs. Thrasher pulls back and meets my eyes.
He won't break your heart. I taught him better than that, she whispers before releasing me.
Buford meets us at the truck, and I drop to my knees to snuggle him one last time.
I'm going to miss you, too. Probably not as much as he's going to miss you.
Boone gives the dog a good long scratch behind the ears before holding out a hand to me. Buford gives my face a lick, and I kiss his silky head before letting Boone haul me to my feet.
Don't worry. You'll be seeing him again. I promised Kai I'd bring you back, and I'm a man of my word.
Boone says as he opens the driver's door of his truck. Do I dare believe him? What his mom said echoes through my head. He won't break your heart. I guess we'll find out.
31. One of the security guys waves at us as we drive through the gate, and I remember it's Sunday and Anthony's day off. He better have made sure Esteban got breakfast. Ripley shifts the truck into park once she brings it to a stop in the garage. Is it weird that this is actually one of the better birthdays I've had? My gaze cuts in her direction. What did you say? The words come out a lot harsher than I intended, but that fits with the level of my shock. I said it's one of the better birthdays. Why the hell didn't you tell me it's your birthday? Ripley shrugs. I don't know. It wasn't a big deal. It never is. I look up at the headliner, asking the Lord to send me down some patience so I don't shake this woman. How am I supposed to do something special for you if you don't friggin' tell me it's your birthday? Ripley's expression wrinkles with confusion. You don't need to do anything special. It's just another day. That's where you're wrong. I pull out my phone and start barking orders when Anthony answers the phone. Sorry about your day off, man. When I hang up, Ripley puts her hand on my arm. Hey, whoa, that wasn't necessary. I've had 29 other birthdays that were no big deal. I lock my eyes on her stormy gray ones. Wait, it's your 30th birthday? She nods. Yeah, but that still doesn't make it a big deal. Jesus Christ, woman, some notice would have been appreciated so I could make it a damn good one. It already was. I spent it with you. The words come out so matter-of-factly, and then her lips clamp together as though she realizes what she said. That's right, Ripley. You feel something for me, and it's not a little something. It's big and scary, but it's real. The simplicity of her statement stabs me through the chest. This is what it's supposed to be like. She's mine, and she's staying mine. She might not realize it yet, or know how to put it into words, but what I saw in that video at the rodeo is the truth. Ripley's falling in love with me. I think we can make it a little better. I lean toward her and she presses a hand to my chest. You need to take it easy, superstar. I want to see your ass on the couch, kicked back, and watching TV. I'll get you a soda and find something to make for dinner. Anthony's bringing takeout and a cake. She rolls her eyes. Not necessary. Completely necessary. Now let's go inside where you can exercise your birthday girl privileges and pick what you want to watch while we wait. She picked Boondock Saints. If there was any remaining question of whether Ripley was the perfect woman for me, that ended the discussion. I was ready to watch whatever chick flick or rom-com she wanted, but Ripley again proved that she's not like anyone else. Mine. The garage door opens and Anthony calls,
Honey, I'm home, and I brought dinner.
Shit house! Esteban has been an asshole during the entire movie, repeating lines and phrases. Apparently, he's expanding his vocabulary. Anthony walks into the living room and glances toward the cage. Did that damn bird just call me a shithouse? Ripley tries to stifle her laugh, but fails.
I think he means brick shithouse, if it makes you feel any better. I'd say that's as close to a compliment as he gets.
Anthony shakes his head as he stares in the bird's direction. Guess he gets a pass. Anthony is built like a brick shithouse, and I'm trying to recall if I've said that in front of the bird, or if his creative streak is stronger than I realized. How many words and phrases does he know? I ask Ripley. She shrugs.
I Googled it once and read they can learn over 200, but he's still shy of 100.
Smart cookie. We all look toward the bird as he preens. Then I take in the bags in Anthony's hands. You get it all? He nods. Obviously. Girl, next time it would go a long way if you could give me some advance warning for this shit. I know I'm pretty damn amazing, but miracles take a little more time. Ripley's cheeks turn pink.
I didn't need a miracle. I didn't need anything.
Anthony crosses over to the table and sets the bags down before fishing something out of one. Not true. You definitely needed this. He comes toward us with his hand tucked behind his back. When he stops next to the couch, he reveals a silver tiara with pink rhinestones. Ripley's eyes go wide as she looks up at Anthony, at the tiara, and then to me.
You didn't need to do that, she whispers.
Every woman needs to be a princess sometimes. Happy birthday, Anthony says, settling it on her head. Damn, man, if I didn't know better, I'd think you were trying to snake my girl. Anthony winks at me. Just forcing you to raise the bar. If you'll give me another minute, I'll set out dinner and put the cake on the counter for when you're ready. Shit, I forgot the balloons in the car. Hold on. He disappears and Ripley adjusts her tiara and shakes her head at me. What?
You?
What about me?
You're something else.
A good something, I hope. She smiles and her whole face lights up.
The best.
I decide in that moment I'd move heaven and earth to bring that smile to Ripley's face as often as possible.
32. Boone turns off the lights and walks toward the table with candles glowing atop the cake. As he walks, he sings Happy Birthday in the most devastating rendition I've ever heard. When he stops, I'm dangerously close to tears. I rein it in and take a deep breath, preparing to blow out the candles.
Hold up. You gotta make a wish first.
The top of the cake looks like it's in danger of setting off the fire alarms with all 30 of the candles, so I know I need to think fast if I'm going to have any frosting that's wax-free. I don't need anything. This is already perfect.
Just make a wish, Ripley. Something big and scary that you've never dared wish before.
With his face flickering in the candlelight, something comes to mind. Like Boone ordered, it's big and scary, and I've never let myself think about it before.
That right there. Whatever you're thinking right now, hold it in your mind and blow out those candles, birthday girl.
I swallow back the lump in my throat and take a deep breath. Part of me is terrified to do it because of what it could mean if that wish came true, but another part of me jumps to the forefront and makes sure every flame is doused by the time I finish.
Happy birthday, Ripley,
Boone whispers before his lips slide across mine, stealing a kiss. When he pulls back, my mind is blank, except for the wish shining like a beacon.
I need 2 vodka tonics with lime, a Budweiser, and a margarita, one of the cocktail waitresses calls across the bar, and I snap into action.
It's Tuesday, and one of Nashville's hottest new artists is setting up on stage. The White Horse is packed tonight. Hope is off, and the rest of us are hustling to keep up with orders from people at the bar and waitresses on the floor. I set the drinks on the tray and slap the ticket beside them. Thanks, hon. With a nod, the waitress disappears into the crowd, balancing the tray like the pro she is. I give my ankle a stretch, still feeling the twinge that creeps up on me. Running down the bleachers, vaulting over a fence, and sprinting through dirt at the rodeo didn't help matters, but I'd do it all again in a heartbeat. I move down the bar, wiping it with a rag as I go, and look up at the next group and take their orders. I freeze as I make eye contact with the 2 women. Holy shit. I look around, but no one seems to notice that a country music legend is sitting at the bar, or that one of the hottest female artists of the year is perched on the stool next to her. Tana Vines and Holly Wicks. Actually, now I suppose she's technically Holly Wicks Karras, wife of the infamous billionaire who tracked her down after a one-night stand and married her. I followed the whole story on a gossip site that I now avoid after seeing pictures of me with Boone on there. Pull it together, Rip. What can I get for you, ladies? Sprite for me, Holly Wicks says with a smile. But Tana needs a glass of your best red. Tana shoots Holly a look. You told me you were planning on pumping and dumping. You can drink, damn it. I'm not drinking by myself. I can't do that. It just doesn't feel right. Tana rolls her eyes. Wait until kid number two. You won't think twice about it. Either way, I'm not drinking tonight. We're lucky Cray was still in his office, or I probably wouldn't have made it out of the house in the first place. My gaze bounces back and forth between them like a ping-pong game. That man, I swear, he would have put a team of 10 security guys on us rather than just my two. For the first time, I see the two men in suits taking up space just to the side and behind the women, blocking them from view with shoulders the size of linebackers. That's why we have to make this quick before he tracks us down, swoops in, and carries me out of here. My eyebrows shoot up. I knew this Karras guy sounded like an asshole in the press, but... You know you love that alpha shit. God knows I do, too. When Mick lays down the law and says he's going to paddle my ass... Tana shifts. Anywho, there go my panties. I feel like I'm overhearing a conversation I shouldn't be privy to, but I can't stop listening as I fill a glass with ice and Sprite and reach for our best bottle of red. I set the glasses in front of them, and it hits me that Holly and Boone have recorded duets together. They even did one live. Oh, hell, was that the night Amber stood him up? Crap, it was. Her presence here can't be a coincidence. Is there anything else I can do for you, ladies? Holly leans an elbow on the bar and looks me in the eye. Yes, there's one big thing. I'd really like to hear you sing, Ripley Fisher. Someone showed me a video, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And then I saw another video, and I called up Zane Frisco to get the scoop. Shock has stolen my vocabulary, but that doesn't seem to bother Holly because she keeps speaking. Frisco filled me in on all the gossip I've been missing while living in Mommy Land, which included the fact that I was really talking to the wrong person, so I gave another old friend a call. Boone, I guess. Holly nods with a brilliant smile on her face. And my dear friend Boone mentioned that you were thinking about talking to some labels, so I had to rip him a new one because the only label you should be talking to is mine. I'd like to hear you for myself first. But I think it's safe to say that Homegrown Records is very interested in you. Oh, my God. Holly Wicks's label is interested in me? Holy crap. Did Boone put you up to this? Tana interrupts. Oh, honey, no. I got to hear one side of that call, and Holly was dragging information out of that boy one piece at a time. She's been talking about you nonstop for 3 days. I mean, you may have sealed the deal when you threw yourself over the fence to save him from a stampede, but this is as real as it gets. Boone doesn't have a clue we're here. It was one bull. Tana waves me off. Pfft, I won't even go near a cow unless it's grilled and on my plate, so you're Xena Warrior Princess in my book. Holly's gaze turns shrewd as she studies me. She's right. Once I realized you were a badass bitch and had a set of pipes, I knew we had to talk, and soon. Hey, can I get a drink over here? A man yells from a few feet away. Don't you holler at her, she's busy. Anna's thick drawl attracts more attention than she realizes. Holy crap, you look just like Tana Vines. Impersonator, honey. If I didn't, I'd be pretty shitty at my job. What do you need, sir? I ask the man.
4 buds. Bottles, not draft.
I look to Holly and Tana. I'll be right back. I hurry to the cooler and pop the tops off the bottles and serve them up.
What about me?
With an apologetic glance at the two women, I serve 4 more customers. When I finally make my way back to Holly and Tana, it's to find 2 men heading toward them, parting the crowd in the bar like the Red Sea.
Oh, shit.
Tana says. Holly takes a sip of her Sprite. Double shit. They both found us. The infamous billionaire Creighton Karas is just as forbidding in person as the media has made him out to be. His dark hair and expensive suit scream, "Don't piss me off because I'll bury you." His gaze is fixed on Holly, and I could swear the rest of the people in the bar don't even exist to him.
Tana, what the hell are you doing?
The voice belongs to another country legend, Mick Vines, Tana's husband. In their day, they caused their own media firestorm. Behind both men trailed two more guys in suits.
Hey, baby, Tana drawls. I'm almost ready.
Holly.
Karas's tone is quiet but firm.
Yes, my love?
His hard features go soft for a moment.
Is there something I'm missing here? Because your text said you had a late meeting that was urgent.
I did. We're almost done. Cray, meet Ripley. She's Homegrown's hottest new prospect.
His gaze shifts to me, and with the intensity of his stare, I wouldn't be surprised if he has superpowers that enable him to see down to the depths of my soul. Karas's chin lifts.
The pleasure is all mine, Ms. Fisher.
His statement doesn't require a response, for which I'm thankful, because I don't know what the hell to say to this imposing man. Then it slaps into me. Wait, how does he know my last name? There's only one explanation I come up with. This guy is scary.
Babe, let's go. Pops are already circling.
This comes from Mick.
Those assholes are worse than turkey buzzards.
Tana downs the rest of her wine.
I guess I'm ready, but we didn't get a firm answer out of Ripley. Holly needs to hear her sing so she can sign her to the label.
That may be the case, but unfortunately it's not happening tonight.
Karas delivers the verdict. Holly rolls her eyes.
Then I guess I have to come back tomorrow for open mic night so I can hear what I need.
She looks to me.
Does that work for you, Ripley?
Holly.
Shh, Cray. We'll have more security. It'll be fine.
He pinches the bridge of his nose.
Damn right we will.
His attention zeroes in on me one more time.
Make sure to let management know that my security team will be contacting them in the morning to go over plans.
Okay. Cray, if you scare her, she's not going to want to sign with Homegrown. Boone already told me I had my work cut out for me to convince her, so I don't need you making it more difficult.
He did? I ask. Holly winks.
He told me quite a bit, and I'm so happy for you both.
Her smile disappears.
As long as you don't screw him over like that bitch Amber, we'll be all good. Otherwise, you should know that I know people in the family.
The family? Holy shit, is she talking about the mob?
And on that note, I think we're done here,
Creighton Karas says with finality in his tone.
Bye, Ripley.
Holly and Tana both wave as they slide off their stools.
See you tomorrow.
I watch as the entire contingent makes its way out of the White Horse, half the crowd standing gape-jawed, and the other half snapping pictures like crazy. What the hell did I just agree to? Boone has a lot of explaining to do.
33. Holly's practically bouncing in her seat, and her excitement is contagious. Seeing Ripley on video is a lot different from seeing her perform live. Even though I've got all the confidence in the world in her, I'm still a little nervous. Shit, I'm more nervous than before I step on stage in front of thousands. Tonight's attendance has been heavily curtailed due to Creighton Karas's iron-handed rule over security, but I can't blame the bastard. When Holly told me she showed up here last night with only Tana and two guys, I asked her if she'd lost her damned mind. She flipped me off. I miss that girl. After touring with her, she became like a little sister to me, and I'm glad as hell to see her succeeding and finding her own happiness. When we talked last night, she also broke the truth to me about the fact that she never liked Amber. She thought Amber was a bitch from day one and was irate that she'd fucked me over, but happy I'd parted ways with her. Hindsight, being 2020 and all that, I couldn't disagree with Holly. I also wanted to shake her and ask her why she hadn't bothered to tell me in the first place. But then again, no one did. Not my parents, my brother, or my friends. No one. They just let me almost make the biggest mistake of my life. A mistake that meant I never would have met Ripley. That thought is enough to twist my gut into knots. What's she singing tonight? Tana asks from the other side of the table. I don't know. She didn't tell me. I don't mention that Ripley was too pissed off at me when she called because I had the keys to a rental car delivered, and it was parked in the spot where her javelin was before Anthony stole it. Although it wasn't really stealing. He just got a wrecker to put it on a flatbed so we could take it out of state. Regardless, she was fucking pissed. She killed that Carrie song. I'd love to hear her sing something else, though, Holly says. I guess we'll find out. Next up, we got the White Horse's own Ripley Fisher, the announcer calls, and Ripley climbs onto the stage with a guitar in hand and wearing her White Horse tank and tight black jeans with tall black boots. Fuck, she looks gorgeous. Behind us, the crowd yells, and Holly and Tana both cheer. Ripley walks straight to the mic and doesn't make eye contact with anyone. She doesn't introduce herself or speak to the crowd before she puts the guitar strap over her shoulder and starts with a few chords. I didn't know she played, Holly whispers. Me either, I reply, even though it burns to admit it. Within a few moments, it's clear what she's playing, and I can't keep the smile off my face. Maren Morris's My Church. Unlike the video I saw of Ripley belting out Carrie Underwood, this one embraces her husky voice as she adds subtle power behind it. The line about finding redemption when she gets in her car has to be a subtle jab at me for stealing the javelin, and I laugh. This woman, she's everything. By the chorus, she's got everyone in the bar on their feet singing along. There's magic in her voice, and when Holly grabs my arm and squeezes, I know she hears it too. When Ripley whispers thank you into the microphone and leaves the stage, Holly is out of her seat before I am. That's it. I want her. She's the new sound I've been dying to hear. Then you'll have her, Karis replies. I'm pretty sure Holly could have said she wanted the International Space Station, and he'd agreed to get it for her. We'll get the contracts drafted and schedule a meeting in the office. Also, the nanny just texted that Rose is fussy, so I'd like to get home. I never thought I'd see the day that arrogant asshole Karis let his schedule be dictated by a baby, but damned if it doesn't make me like him better. Lines of concern bracket Holly's eyes. She is? Why didn't you say something? Karis looks at his wife and tucks a lock of wavy hair behind her ear. Because this is important to you? Tana rolls her eyes. Damn, you two are so sweet, you're going to make me puke. Mick and I are staying. I'll let you know if I hear any more gems, babe. I don't stick around to watch Holly and Tana say their goodbyes because I'm already off in search of Ripley. I catch sight of Hope behind the bar, and she must know exactly what I'm after because she points me in the direction of the employee break room. Shoving open the door, I find Ripley putting the guitar in a case. I wait to speak until she turns around, but any words I intend to say are erased when I see the tears tracking down her face. Sugar, what's wrong? Ripley's head jerks up as though she just realized I'm standing here. When she swipes her hands over her cheeks, trying to hide the evidence, I cross the room and pull her into my arms. You killed it. Why are you crying? With a snuffle, Ripley composes herself. I always wanted to play on stage with my mama's guitar, but Pop smashed it when I was 13 and finally worked up the courage to ask for lessons. He told me there was no way in hell he was going to let me parade myself on a stage like a stripper begging for dollar bills. I could kill that old man. Straight up kill him. I'm so sorry. I wish I could get it back for you. He's going to be so pissed when he finds out I'm playing and singing, and I'm not going to care this time. I'm done letting him control my life. He ran Mama into the ground, chased her into another man's arms. That was on him. He did that. I'm not letting him run me down anymore. I'm done. That's when I realized just how big of a deal it was for Ripley to take this step, and it explains why she never pursued it before. She wasn't just bogged down with work at the bar. She had an asshole of a father who shoveled years of bullshit on her. I'm really fucking proud of you, Ripley. You nailed it. Holly wants to sign you. She said you're the sound she's been looking for. Ripley's eyes go wide. What? This is your shot, if you want it. If I want it, Ripley repeats in a whisper. This would change everything, my whole life. Not everything. What do you mean? I reach out to take her hand. What's happening between us isn't changing, no matter what you decide. I don't care if you're Ripley Fisher, hot new country artist, or Ripley Fisher bartender as long as you're mine. She swallows, her eyes searching my face. Are you sure? Because right now I have no idea what I'm going to decide. Am I sure that I'm crazy in love with you either way? Damn right I am. Ripley's other hand comes up and presses to my lips. Don't say that. You can't be. It's not. I kiss her fingers and move them out of the way. I can. I am. You're the most incredible woman I've ever met, and I knew that for a fact before I ever heard you sing. It's okay if you can't say it back. I don't want to hear it until you're ready. The door to the break room opens, and the sound of the crowd in the bar filters in. Rip, we need you behind the bar. Sorry, girl. Shit's getting crazy now that the security people have left. Everyone heard that celebrities are here, and they're wanting inside. Ripley looks over my shoulder to whoever is speaking. I'll be right out. Just one more minute. When the door closes again, Ripley turns back to me. I gotta go. You should probably get out of here. They're already on the hunt for you. Don't worry about me. I'm not going anywhere until it's time to take you home. You'll be mobbed. They won't leave you alone. I pull a shirt out of my back pocket. Hope hooked me up. I hold up the black t-shirt. It's an inverse of Ripley's white tank top with the White Horse Saloon logo, and when I flip it around to the back, she bursts into laughter. It reads, Security. Really? Consider me your personal security tonight.
34. I roll over in bed to find a note on Boone's pillow instead of the man I planned to ravage. Where did he go? My vision still fuzzy from sleep. I blink until the blue ink comes into focus. Sugar. Had an early radio station interview and didn't want to wake you. Expect a call from Homegrown Records this morning. Holly wants to set up a meeting. I'll be home by noon. Love you, Boone. Holy wow. A rip current of emotions threatens to drag me under as I reread the note. Being the mature adult that I am, I pull the covers over my head and consider what in the world I'm going to do. Holly wants to set up a meeting. I knew it was coming, but to see it in writing is a completely different situation. This is my shot. My chance at a life I never let myself dream about. The one my mama wanted but couldn't have because her life was cut short by someone who literally got away with murder. Skip rip current. This is a tsunami I'm dealing with. But I can't hide under the covers all day and wait for the decision to make itself. And then there's the rest of the note. I'll be home. Strangely enough, I feel almost as comfortable in Boone's house as I did in my old apartment above the bar. Actually, I feel more comfortable here than I do taking up space in Hope's living room on her futon, but that doesn't mean it's my home. You're stalling, Rip. And yes, I am, because the last part of the note could bring me to my knees if I were standing. Love you. How is it possible that this incredibly generous, talented, kind man is in love with me? It feels like the cosmos is playing some kind of joke on me, but it's real, and that's crazy. Crazy amazing, though. My phone vibrates from the nightstand, and I throw off the covers, shoot up in the bed, and reach for it. The number is one that I don't recognize, but I clear my throat and answer it in the most professional tone I can muster. Hello? Hi, is this Ripley Fisher? Yes, this is she. Wonderful. I'm Etta with Homegrown Records, and Ms. Wicks would like to schedule a meeting with you at your earliest convenience, preferably today, if possible. I know this is a little unorthodox, but she said you'd know what it pertains to. When would be the first available time in your schedule to come in? Ms. Wicks is happy to accommodate you, as her schedule is still largely clear today. Oh, wow. Okay, she wants me to come in today? If possible. She's going to be here by 11 o'clock, unless you'd like to meet earlier. I glance at the clock on the table. It's already 8:30, and I need to shower, get back to Hope's to change into something resembling professional attire, and make the trip to Homegrown's office, which I'm pretty sure is right on Music Row, so not too far. For a moment, I think about waiting for Boone and seeing if he wants to come with me, but then I straighten my shoulders. This is about me. I can do this on my own. I'm a strong, independent woman. I can be there at 11. That would work great. Is your office on Music Row? Etta relays the rest of the pertinent information, and we confirm that I'll be at Homegrown Records office to meet Holly freaking Wicks at 11 o'clock.
Thank you so much, Ms. Fisher. We'll see you this morning. I'm really looking forward to meeting you. I saw your videos, and Ms. Wicks hasn't stopped talking about you.
When I hang up the phone, it feels like the grin on my face may be permanent. I run from the bed to Boone's shower and hop inside. The whole time I'm washing up, I can't stop thinking, holy crap, this is really happening. At 10:55, I step into the outer office of Homegrown Records, and I'm suddenly worried that I'm overdressed. The weathered wooden boards of the floor look like they were salvaged from an old barn somewhere, and the giant green shag rug under the brown leather furniture resembles grass you'd see in a barnyard. The reception desk also looks like it's made of the same reclaimed boards, and it's topped with a heavy live-edge slab of wood. Silver letters are mounted on the wall behind the desk in a whimsical arrangement. Homegrown Records. A woman with short blonde hair and an angular chin pops up from behind the desk.
Hi, you're Ripley Fisher. I recognize you from the videos. I'm Etta. We spoke this morning.
I nod. Thank you so much for setting this up. I know I'm a few minutes early.
Not a problem. Ms. Wicks just came in with Princess Rose, so she's getting her settled in the nursery. And then she'll be ready to talk to you. We're really excited you were able to make it. Can I get you anything? Coffee? Soda? Water? Tea? Smoothie? Espresso drink? We have the most amazing coffee maker, so if there's anything you want, I can get it for you.
Her solicitous attitude almost throws me off my game, because I'm used to being the one who's serving up drinks and making sure people are comfortable. To be on the receiving end of that treatment is completely different.
Water would be great. Thank you.
Of course. She ducks down and produces a bottle of water with the Homegrown Records label on it from what must be a mini fridge beneath the desk.
Please have a seat. Ms. Wicks shouldn't be but a few minutes.
I make my way over to the seating area, and my boots sink into the plush green shag carpet. I didn't exactly know what to wear for this meeting, so I went with black slacks, a white blouse, and a black jacket that is as close to a blazer as I own. It zips up at an asymmetrical angle, and the cuffs sport thick silver buttons. My boots were the only footwear that looked remotely right with the outfit, so that's what I picked. I haven't had a lot of excess funds lately, so shoe shopping has been at the bottom of my priority list, not that it was ever near the top.
I'm so sorry to keep you waiting.
Holly's familiar voice fills the reception area as she crosses the room. I'm glad I didn't go any fancier, because Holly's outfit is purely Nashville casual. A cream-colored sweater cinched at her waist with a thick brown belt, and skinny jeans tucked into brown-heeled leather boots that come up to her knee. Gold earrings dangle to her shoulders, peeking in and out of her blonde mane that looks just as good as it does on TV.
Not at all, I say, finding my voice. I was early. Thank you for meeting with me.
It's my pleasure. I appreciate you coming in today. I can't tell you how happy it makes me to have you here. Come on back. We can get comfortable and talk. I follow her through a door to the left of the reception desk and find the inner offices of Homegrown are just as rustic as the outer. Creighton had the entire place redesigned and remodeled while I was out on maternity leave. I have no idea how in the hell he managed it, but he did. I wondered why he wouldn't let me come back to Nashville for weeks, but as always, that diabolical man had bigger plans. He knew once I got in this town, I'd find a way to get into my office. The rough wood, heavy silver accents, and pops of red weren't what I'd expect with Creighton Karras heading up the project, but Holly continues. Would you believe he found my dream office Pinterest board that had all the pictures for inspiration? Seriously, I swear he must have worked for the CIA at some point. That board was secret, and still he managed to sniff it out and make it real, right down to the rose accents for our baby girl. While her words would suggest she was marginally annoyed, the giant smile on her face belies them. It's clear she loves her new digs, and her husband, very much. He's freaking terrifying, if you ask me, but then again, no one did. We reach her corner office, where three of the four walls are solid glass. Two look out over Nashville, and the third into a nursery, where a woman sits in the corner watching a tiny pink bundle sleep.
That's Rose,
Her daddy made her a princess nursery where I could watch over her while I work. The glass will frost at the touch of a button, but Cray knew I'd want to have her with me as much as possible.
Wow, that's amazing.
He's incredibly sweet, but don't tell him I told you. He prefers people be scared of him.
Mission accomplished, I think, but keep that to myself.
Have a seat and we'll get down to business.
She motions to a small seating area with a distressed leather love seat and two chairs.
Thank you.
Holly grabs a file off the desk and takes the love seat, which makes me glad I picked one of the chairs.
I know this seems kind of sudden, but that's the way this business goes. So many people become stars overnight when they've actually been playing the bars and small venues for a decade. Still, when it does happen, it moves fast. So, first things first.
She pins me with a direct look. Do you want to be an overnight star? Because that's what we're fixing to do for you.
Now, I have to say there are no guarantees, but in reality, with the money Homegrown is prepared to invest in you and your brand, you will be everywhere. Since Cray acquired the label, I haven't been focused on adding new talent, but more shoring up everything else. You're my first, and I refuse to have you be anything less than a major success. Get me?
Even with her drawl, she's still talking fast enough that my brain is stumbling to keep up. My brand? Without waiting for an answer, Holly continues.
Before you answer that question, let's talk about a couple other things. Like, do you write your own songs, or would you plan to only record songs written by others? We don't care either way, because honestly, a big chunk of the artists in this town don't write a word of their own music. But if you do write your own songs, I want to hear some of them, and we'll probably set you up with a seasoned songwriter so we can make sure they're all top-notch and sort out which ones could go on an album.
I nod and finally speak. I do write songs. Not a lot lately, because I've been busy, and frankly, this has never been something I've had to think seriously about before. It's never even been in the realm of real possibilities.
Holly smiles and crosses one leg over the other. Honey, I know. If you do this, you're still going to have trouble believing it's real 6 weeks or even 6 months from now. This is life-changing. That's why deciding whether you want to go for it is the biggest hurdle. The YouTube videos you've got out there are still getting hundreds of thousands of hits a day, especially the one of you and Frisco, so right now you're a mystery, and people want to know more. If we jump on that, get you the right press and interviews, we ride the wave and keep you relevant while we prep your first album. But if you decide you don't want to do this, then it'll eventually fade after your 15 minutes are up.
I take a deep breath and run through the thoughts that have been speeding through my mind all morning. I don't have any other solid plans for my future right now. Literally none. I'd be an idiot not to give it a shot. Holly leans forward on the couch.
It may seem hard to believe, but I know some of what you're feeling right now. Before I went on Country Dreams for my shot at a recording contract, I was deep-frying pickles in a bowling alley in Kentucky. There's not a damn thing wrong with that because it's honest work, but I was going nowhere fast. I knew I needed one shot to get out and make something of my life, so when that chance came around, I took it. From what I understand, you've been working in a bar so long you probably don't remember what it's like to do anything else. And there's also nothing wrong with that. But if you've been waiting for a chance, I'm going to be real blunt. This is it.
She pauses for a moment before continuing.
I'm not saying Homegrown is the only label that's going to try to sign you, but I'm saying this moment, this exposure, is your shot. The other labels may not be as generous or as driven to make you a success as we are, though. I'm not trying to pressure you into choosing Homegrown, but I would be making you my personal project. And Ripley, I don't fail when I set out to prove myself. You don't have to buy into anything I'm saying, but it's the truth. Homegrown Records will soon be a major force in this industry, and it will be my mission to take you to the top.
I wrap my arms around my middle, not sure why I feel the need to protect myself. Probably because this level of vulnerability isn't something I often show to strangers.
It's a little scary to think of how everything would change. I know. I get it. But think about this. Holly studies me. I also know what it's like to have a man at your side who is larger than life and has access to resources that seem impossible to comprehend. Cray and I will never be equals in the financial arena because he's so damn filthy rich,
but I'm no slouch at earning a paycheck and standing on my own two feet. It's hard when you've got a man in your life who would happily step in and take over everything for you. But you've been doing it all on your own for so long that I can't imagine you like having to lean on Boone for help without being able to give it in return. Damn. Score one for incredibly perceptive Holly Wicks. How did you know? Because I've got a fierce streak of pride, just like you. So what if my daddy disappeared and my mama was a deadbeat who left me on my grand's front porch and forgot to come home for years at a time? I didn't want to feel like I was worth any less than my billionaire husband, and I found my self-worth on the stages where I performed until he and I sorted our life out. Her nonchalant recitation of her family history knocks something loose in me. That's the only explanation I have for what comes next. My mama was killed in the bathroom of my family's bar with the man she was cheating with. Pop was already broken, but that day he shattered. He fell into the bottom of a bottle and never found his way out. He had no problem dumping as much stuff on me as he could, but when it came down to it, there was no way I could resurrect the fishbowl from that with no resources. I tried. I really did. But I failed.
Oh, honey. You don't own that failure. You were set up for it. But the amazing part is that you kept that bar running for almost 10 years by yourself.
My gaze cuts to her. You know all this already? She nods carefully.
I told you my husband could have worked for the CIA. I probably know more about you than Boone does. But I promise, none of that information leaves this room.
With all this talk about the past, I'm feeling a little lost, and Holly must see that as well.
If you don't want to make a decision today, you don't have to. But in the interest of full disclosure, I'm going to tell you that the sooner you decide, the better. The hits will start to slow, and interest will drop off. We want to harness the current interest and make a big, splashy announcement that we've signed you, and you've got a single coming down the pipe really soon.
Movement comes from the nursery, and our attention shifts as we watch the nanny lift the pink bundle into her arms and walk with her around the room.
If I hadn't stepped on that stage for Country Dreams, I wouldn't be living the life I have right now, Holly says, not looking at me but through the glass wall.
Sometimes, taking a terrifying risk leads to the most unimaginable happiness. The reverence in her tone as she stares at her baby girl hits me deep inside. I want this. Not Holly Wicks's life, but a chance at happiness beyond what I could imagine. I take a deep breath.
I'll do it.
35. I push open the glass door of Homegrown Records with a thick silver envelope in my hand containing the contract Holly had already drawn up. I didn't sign anything yet, because even I know better than that. I need a good lawyer now. But there's no way in hell I'm calling law. I reach out to press the call button on the elevator, but the doors slide open before I make contact. And out steps Amber Fleet. Are you freaking kidding me right now? She knocks into my shoulder as she strides past, and I'm too stunned to jump in the open elevator before the doors shut again. I press the call button and turn to peer through the glass doors leading into Homegrown Records as I wait. Amber's high-pitched voice grows louder and louder with each word until it's impossible to miss.
I want to see Holly Wicks. She won't answer my calls or emails, but I need to talk to her.
Like the eavesdropper I apparently am, I take a step toward the glass door so I can hear Etta's response.
I'm sorry, Miss Fleet. Ms. Wicks's calendar is full today. I can possibly get you in next month when she's officially back full-time from maternity leave.
Damn it, I know she's working before that.
Amber rushes for the door that leads to the inner offices and grabs the handle, but it doesn't budge.
Miss Fleet, please understand that Ms. Wicks is very busy, but I'm happy to make you an appointment for a later date.
I need an appointment now.
That's just not possible, ma'am.
Well, you can tell Holly she's going to regret blowing me off like this. Just wait and see.
Amber spins around. And I dash back to the elevator and press the button 7 times, hoping to get the hell out of here fast. But no such luck for me today in that arena. Apparently, my luck was used up getting the career opportunity of the century. I keep my head down, hoping Amber won't recognize me. Her heels clack against the wood,
and she punches the already lit elevator button like it's somehow going to make it come faster. She releases an annoyed huff and crosses her arms, tapping her foot and mumbling something I can't make out. She must finally look at me because the tapping stops, and I can't help but glance at her face. Her gaze is fixed on the envelope in my hands.
She met with you, didn't she? That little bitch.
Excuse me? It's not until I speak that Amber's gaze lands on my face, and when it does, her features contort into an ugly mask.
You've got to be fucking kidding me. She met with you.
Her words aren't so different from the thoughts I had earlier, but at least mine were missing the thick layer of malice.
She did not just sign you. No fucking way. I don't believe it.
I'm not about to give her any kind of affirmative response, so I decide to go with a benign, excuse me? When the elevator doors open, I step toward them, hoping Amber is too pissed.